We're beginning Simon Kuf Chaf Aleph today. Now, Kuf Chaf Aleph only has, you'll see, Seder Hatra Kelim Haniklim and Ovi Chadm Ubo Zayin Si'ifim. Wow, that seems extremely manageable, especially when you look at how short Siv Gimel is. Look at Siv Gimel, what does it say? Dine Hagala Velibun Halohim Tsuvim Behilchus Pesach. So that's where Kuf Chaf Aleph gets long, because all of it appears in Hilchus Pesach. In Or Chaim Sim Tafnu Nalav Tafnu Beis. Why does the Mechaber spend all of his time in Tafnu Nalav Tafnu Beis and not over here? Meaning this is the halachos of Agolas Kelim, which should be over here. Why does he talk about it in such great detail earlier and not over here? So Pashtus is because Or Chaim comes before Yer Hadayah. So it comes up in Or Chaim. He's going to discuss it in great detail in Or Chaim, and then in Yer Hadayah he could just make a reference to that which was said earlier. Now it is, as I mentioned at the end of Shir last week, it is somewhat helpful though that the Mechaber himself, you know, pretty much composed a summary of Hilchas Libun and Hagala over here, meaning it's much harder to learn through Tafnu Nal Tafnu Beis in Arachayim, but here you have like a nice outline of the summary of the basic dinim. And if you look at the Seder of the Simen, it seems to be that the Simen goes from cold to hot. That we start with that which is those kelim that are only used for cold, and then we get into things that are used more hot, and then it comes back a little bit at the end. But anyway, it is somewhat easier when you go through the sim. Just a little bit of background, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with already anyway, but just it's kedai to go through and be mesader in an organized way. We're familiar with two forms of kashering. There are more than two, and there are subcategories of the different types of kashering, but the two forms of kashering are basically hagala and libun. Obviously, there's difference between libun kal and libun gamur, and there's mrichu shtifa, and there are other things, but the basic two forms of kashering are hagala and libun. The mechanical difference between them, and this is critical for so many halachos, we'll point out 3.5 minutes right now, but the mechanical difference between them is that hagala's function is to draw out the tam, whereas libun's function is it destroys the tam. It goes in and destroys all of the blios. When you do hagala, the blia, because it's being drawn out, the blia goes into the water, and therefore you risk making the water treif, which would allow the blia to go right back in. So hagala is a much more risky type of hechsher kelim because the blia is still there. So you're going to have to account for where the blia is going to go to before the kli is going to become kosher. Whereas by libun, you don't have to account for anything. It's destroyed. It's gone. The blia is gone. 3 nafkaminas in terms of how to do it based on this fundamental difference. 1 nafkamina is that because Hagala only draws out the Bliya and the Bliya is in the water, you have to be careful to make it in Einu Ben Yomo, which we require lechachila, that you, when you draw out the tam should not be a tam that's treif anymore. So you make sure that it's a tam pogum first. So it's an Einu Ben, you have to wait till Tzeva Ben Yomo before you do Hagala. There's another way to do it. There's another way to get around this problem of the fact that when you draw out the tam, it goes into the water, and now it's just going to go right back into the kli and trafe up the kli again. What's the other way to take care of that problem? Is that you have shishim, right? So if you have a pogim is, we'll get to that. But if you have shishim, the tam becomes batel in the water, and then mele, it's not going to be a problem. Problem is that the kalim can't really hold shishim of the volume of the Dofnei Akli. It just doesn't work out physically. But if you have like a fork or something, strictly speaking, we'll discuss in more detail, strictly speaking, it doesn't need to be Einu Ben Yomo. If you have shishim in the water, can I get the kli that needs to be kashered. So one of those two things have to happen. It either needs to be Einu Ben Yomo, or it needs to be that you have shishim. Now, in cases where they can't do either of those things, so kashrus organizations allow them to use a pogim, to make it pogum even though it's still ben yomo. How do they do that? Like in a hotel. The caterer is going to go into the hotel kitchen and he's going to need to kashrus things. He doesn't need to kashrus everything, but he needs to kashrus a lot of things. So they have these big steam cookers or something. So what are they going to do? They can't, there's no way, the contents of the kli are nowhere near 60 times the Dofnei Kli. They have these big thick walls in these steam cookers. and they can't ask the hotel to let it not cook anything for 24 hours in advance. And they just don't have it. The hotel rents, you know, tries to maximize the time that they can rent out the space and rent out the kitchen and bring in. They have a catered event every night there, so it's very hard. They can't really get 24 hours. So that's when they rely on the Davar HaPogim. It happens to be a big discussion whether you can do that, whether you can rely on the Davar HaPogim, but the oven for sure works. I mean, the question whether you should do it with Chachila, all the caterers do it, all the kosher organizations allow it. Discussion we'll get to whether they should or shouldn't, but Lamaisa, it works. So that's why when you eat at a hotel, it's kosher, meaning, or it's not kosher. It's not kosher for that reason. Meaning, it's that would be enough to kasher. Now, Rabelsky has a tshuva about kashering ben yomo from milchit. What if it's not kashering from treif? Right. So Rabelsky writes in the tshuva in the OU documents. By the way, there are a ton. I think I mentioned there are a ton of documents from the OU on kashering. I have two zip files full of documents. Who put it together last time? Ari put it together? Or was it Kershaw put it together? You put it together? All the documents, the OU documents?
In one thing?
Yeah. So can I send them? Would you be willing to do that again? Yeah? Okay, so Belina, I'll send you the documents and give you more homework in case you're bored. So Rabelsky writes as follows. He says, Nishalti oldos klishu ben yomo mblias heter kigon chalav. You have a kli that's ben yomo, but it's blias heter. It has chalav. Amarti bepshitus He says you can kasher them even if it's b'nei yoman, as long as you do two agalos. Why? Kimei ha'agala harishon lo yasu nevela kivin shu heter. You don't say chanan on a dvar heter. So the first hagala, the water of the first hagala, is not going to be nevela. Va'agala habeis tachshir akli, and the second hagala is therefore going to kasher the kli. He says, and even for Cholavakum, because Mekar Adim is really mutter, and it's a Drabanan, I'm willing to be Mekil. V'davar alalu huvu al shulchan ha'oyu, kama pa'amim kayadua, and these kinds of things come up in the OU all the time. Ulam, kivan sheyesh kan she'elas migdar milsa, but since this is a shayla of migdar milsa, that we're going to start allowing kashering on b'nei yoman, oh, it's going to be a big tumult, and everyone's going to get confused. What about when it's not kosher? So he says, shlo atir davar zeh, because amarti shlo atir davar zeh, rakim yaskim yimi, harava gon rasvi shechtir. Nero Yair says, therefore, I will not be mad to this unless Rav Shechter agrees. Yisrael HaLev Belsky does not have a follow-up in the document whether Rav Shechter agreed or not, so I don't know if he did or not. But leaving that aside, we're going to talk about kashering not from, you know, Milichik Taparev or whatever. Well, let's talk about kashering from... Oh, that reminds me, by the way, someone from Boca texted me that they had Rav Shechter speak about those non-dairy dairy creamers, and because there was some back and forth about Rav Shechter. Rabelsky, we know, was Mekel. You can have it after Milch Mule. Rabbi Willig was Mekel if you have it an hour after Inflation Mule. Rather, Rabbi Willig was Mekel an hour after Inflation Mule. He said that way it's, you know, probably it's much right away, but wait an hour, and that way at least it's an hour later. But Rav Shechter told some people yes, some people no. When I pushed him on it, he said, Rabelsky's right, you know, whatever. But like he, you know, but then he's continued to tell people no that you can't do it. So they pushed him in Boca. They, you know, they, I guess it was at 4 a.m. and they felt they could. So they squeezed him a little bit, and he said, "La halacha, Rabelsky's correct, but I wouldn't do it." Okay, so that's where he landed on that issue. Okay. Anyway, so that's one nafkamina between blia and between hagala rather than libun, is that since hagala is going to dry out the tam into the kli, so now you have to deal with that tam. So you could deal with it either by bit of the shishin, or you deal with it by making sure that it's a tam pogum. Another nafkamina is that you can never do hagala on Pesach because chametz zasu b'mashuhu and it's also filo in ben yomo. So if you go to a hotel and get to Shaila every single year, someone's traveling on Chol HaMoed and they're checking into a hotel and they want to know what they can kasher at the hotel, what do you call it when you rent a house, you know,
Airbnb,
right? They're going into an Airbnb and they want to kasher for Pesach, so they think they can just do all the kashering that they did back at home that they could just do that at the hotel. No, you can't do that because you can't do Hagalah on Pesach, because the way Hagalah works is that the Tam is still there, and Shishim is not going to help you, and Eben Yom is not going to help you. But Libun can be done on Pesach, because Libun actually destroys the Tam. So if you check into the Airbnb and there's a self-clean oven, so then you could do Libun. That's going to work. You're able to do it. If you get the self-clean oven, gets to a 800 degrees. A third nafkamina would be between Libun and Agala is whether the kli has to be clean. Sometimes you have, the balabasta is going to scrub down the oven with easy off and with everything else and every pogame under the sun, you know, to make sure that there's nothing there in the last 10 shilas, but there's a little black mark. Do I have to assume that that's still the end or mamashus or whatever, right? And they're very nervous about this. And then they self-clean the oven. When you self-clean the oven, it burns everything up anyway. So if it's burning everything up, it burns that up also. So Libun would not require that the kli be perfectly clean. If you have a be'en on a kli, you can't do Hagalah. Hagalah is only going to work on blios. It's not going to work on a be'en. But you can do Libun because it's going to burn it up anyway. It should be noted that lemaisa, when it comes to self-cleaning ovens, it's not so pashut anymore. Rabbanim are in the habit of always telling people, oh, you have a self-clean? No problem, just self-clean it. There are two complications with that right now. In the year 2021, Tavshin Pei Aleph, there are two complications with that. Complication number one is self-clean doesn't really work anymore. In the sense that not most of the time, but I would say a miut hamatsui of the times that people put modern ovens on the self-clean cycle, the oven just breaks. It self-destructs. Meaning the ovens have a self-clean cycle. Every year, at least one or two families in my shul have to buy a new oven because they self-clean the oven, and the button shouldn't say self-clean, it should say self-destruct. That's what happens to the oven. So it's extremely risky a couple of days before Pesach, when you're trying to cook everything, to self-clean the oven, then you're going to have to figure out how you're going to buy a new oven. So that's one problem with self-cleaning. It's just a practical problem. It's a mitzvah problem. There's another mitzvah problem that's a halachic problem, is that a lot of times Rabbanim will say, don't worry, just hit the self-clean cycle. Well, some of the oven manufacturers realized, since our ovens are made not as well as they used to be, and therefore they self-destruct if you have regular self-clean, so they came up with a chap, that there's another way to have a self-clean feature on the oven, that it's not going to clean anymore with 1,000 degrees of heat or 900 degrees of heat or whatever it was that the self-clean is supposed to get to. Now the self-clean oven is going to have like spritzers of steam, and it's going to be a steam clean. That is mamish nothing, meaning that's Iroi Kli Rishon, right? That's the steam cleaning oven is really not gonna kasher an oven as far as halacha is concerned. So I've had a few cases already where people were told by Rabbanim, don't worry, you can clean the oven, it's not a problem. And then at some later point, through other conversations with me, they were saying I was doing the steam clean. Well, the what clean? they Rabbanim weren't aware that self-clean doesn't mean what self-clean used to mean. A lot of the ovens now have a steam self-clean, which doesn't really cash it. So that's a real issue. But assuming that you could do Libun, I forgot to tell you guys, Rabbi Schnall emailed, did he get a hold of you guys on Thursday? What was it? What was the day I wasn't here? Was it Wednesday, Thursday? Wednesday, right? So they were doing kashering. What's the name of the pizza store across from MTA? Como? Como? I don't know, one of these stores, man, it's not familiar, I don't think it was Grandma. So one of these stores, they were doing a Libun there, and they had brought in some expert in Libun, and should have told you guys. All right, so you missed the demonstration. They blowtorch the whole business. So that's the way people used the kasher, sitting there blowtorching every inch of the thing. So that's those are three basic nafkaminas between Libun and Hagalah. The basis of the whole sug is Gemara Nevel Dezara on Daf Ayin Hey Amud Beis Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, as you well know, machlokas whether we say Nosin Tam Lev Gam or not. Right? How come Adi Amud Nosin Tam Lev Gam Aser? How come Adi Amud Nosin Tam Lev Gam Mutter? If you hold Nosin Tam of Gam is mutter, so then why is Giulei of the Chavim? Why do we ever need to kasher anything? Ask the Gemara. Just wait till it's 24 hours later. I'm not clear. Bread Ravuna lo asher Torah el kadeira bas yama. Do I have Nosin Tam of Gam? Who we can veiluch? So ask the Gemara. We can veiluch lishmi. Meaning that really we paskin nosin tam of gam is mutin. 24 hours after the flavor has been absorbed in the walls of the pot, it's going to give off a tam pogum. It's no longer going to answer the food. So if you cook a kosher steak in a non-kosher pot that's been used in the last 24 hours, that has not been used in the last 24 hours, rather that it's an eino ben yomo, the steak remains kosher. Because b'diavad, it's not going to trafe up the food. So the Gemara says, oh, if that's the case, why do you need to kasher? Why did Klal Yisrael in the Midbar have to kasher near their kelim with the clay midyan? Just wait 24 hours? So the Gemara says, it's a gezeira. Gezeira kedera sheina bas yoma atu kedera bas yoma, like we saw 1,000 times already this year. So Chazal, aser neino ben yomo dish, lest you come to use a ben yomo kli. So any used kli that you buy from a non-Jew, not new was tefillah, used kli that you buy from a non-Jew, or any kli that you accidentally traped up, needs to be kashered, even if more than 24 hours have passed. It's always more than 24 hours. Every time I get a shayla, where something needs to be kashered, I always say, wait 24 hours. Oh, it happened 3 weeks ago. It always happens. It's like, apparently it takes 3 weeks to build up the courage to call a rabbi. I don't know, but for a wife to annoy you enough to make the phone call. But apparently it's always more than 24 hours later that people first call. But anyway, you got to wait 24 hours before you kasher it. But that's only a din d'rabbanan. That's important that it's only a din d'rabbanan. It's not a din d'oraisa. The kashering after 24 hours. Rav Schechter has a tshuva in the OU documents from the year Tafshin Nun Ches, where he was asked, "B'mef'al hamyuchad lebishul dag kosher salmon tachas hashkachaseinu." So the OU gave hashkach on cooked salmon, a place that cooks salmon. So b'keshval b'mef'al neis OU michtav hekshe shekol dag hanasa etzlov kosher hu v'chein asu shalchu lo mimisrad OU michtav shekazeh. But now he started producing another fish as well that he claims is a kosher fish. And they sent the fish, they prepared it, and they did this whole production of some other fish, and they sent it somewhere else without an OU on it. So it wasn't really, that fish itself was not an issue. But as far as any mashgiach saw, by the time that they saw that fish in that place, there were no simanim on the fish, meaning the scales were no longer on the fish, and you need simanim on the fish in order to be able to identify it. We discussed, right? We had that shiur about fish once, that why we make it with salmon or with pink fleshed fish. But typically, if it's a white fleshed fish, you can't be mekel. They couldn't recognize it at all. That the second place, they sent to the place that bought the fish from them, that everything is under the hashkach of the OU. So the problem was it wasn't. Meaning they said it was a kosher fish and that everything is fine. So what should they do with this now? Meaning they've caught this place sending their own OU certified letter to their customer who bought this other fish that was not salmon from them, say, it's all under the OU. So he says, Dover Pashru, Rosh Hashanah writes, Dover Pashru, She'ena Nachri Ne'man Al-Kiyagam. The guy has no Ne'manus over here. It's a non-Jewish owner of the factory. He's going to tell you it's a kosher fish. Of course he has no Ne'manus. He has a deal with the OU. He signed a shtar with the OU that he's only going to produce salmon, and he clearly is in breach of contract. He's only allowed to produce salmon. So says Rashad, but maybe you're going to tell me right now all the kelim are not b'nei yoman. And we don't know for sure that it was non kosher fish, and therefore what halachic argument could potentially be made? So I don't know that it wasn't a kosher fish. Maybe it was a kosher fish, and like he's saying, it's kosher fish, and it's being sold as a kosher fish. So maybe a taco was a kosher fish. It's at least a safek. Maybe we shouldn't make them do a hagala, and they shouldn't have to kasher all the kalim in the factory. Says Rav Shachter, we have to require hagala al kol hakelim Why? Betoras Knasa. It says Meikra Adin, they wouldn't need to catch anything. Because something about the Kula is a Din Rabban, but this we have to impose a Knas. He says just like all other kelim of Nachrim that are not bnei yoma, we don't know what they cooked in them. Maybe they cooked kosher food in them, so we don't say something rabbanon lekula. So he's really making two arguments. He's saying first of all we didn't knas, we have to make them kasher, even though meikra din doesn't have to be kasher. He says second of all, are we really sure that Meikar Adin doesn't have to be kasher? Because wouldn't that destroy the entire... Meaning, what would be the case where you would have to kasher when you buy a kli from a Nachri? Maybe the Nachri that you bought the kli from is, Nachrim eat kosher food also. He could have made a vegetable soup. What's in his vegetable soup already? He doesn't put any chicken in there. So maybe he made a vegetable soup in the pot. How do I know that this was his chicken soup pot? I don't know that he ever used it for non-kosher food. Maybe all he ever made in that pot was rice. It was a rice pot. That's what he made in the... There's nothing not kosher about rice. I don't know anything. So it should always be something drabal lakula. But that would be ridiculous. We can't say that every time you buy a kli from a Nachri that maybe you use it for kosher. Obviously, we assume that if a kli belongs to a Nachri, that it was used for not kosher. Elamai, over here, there's more reason to assume it's more of a 50-50, because kelim get used multiple times for multiple things. You don't normally reserve a pot for one. It's like a frum woman thing that they have, like, their fish pot, that they only cook their gefilte fish in that pot. Most people, normal people throughout the world, if you go into a guyish kitchen, there are like two pots in the whole kitchen. There's the big one and the small one, and the frying pan. There's not like, they don't have like, they don't need to build four kitchens with four sets of pots, for Pesach and for Milch and Fleishik and Parav and Pesach, Parav and Pesach, right? You don't have a million different things. So that's all they have. So it's very likely if they're going to reuse, they'll use it. At some point, they'll use it for something not kosher. So it's not really a suffix when you buy from a Nachri. But over here, really, mamish is like a 50-50 suffix. And Adrab, it's probably more likely that it was a kosher fish because they don't want to market it as something that it's not. But nevertheless, Rav Shechter thought we should not say something drabon lekul in this case because of a knas. Because these are people that are in breach of contract. They should see that there are ramifications for doing this. They got to shut down the whole place in kosher. And that will hopefully... that will hopefully teach them a lesson. Okay, so the Mishnah of Odzar Dafayin Hey. Halukeach Kli Tashmish Novdei Chavim. When you buy Kli Tashmish Novdei Chavim, we saw this by Tfilas Kalim. Eshadarko Lahatbil Yatbil, Lahagil Yagil, Lilabin Ba'or Yilabin Ba'or, Hashvud Ba'asum Lilabin Ba'or, Sakin Shafavi Tahora. And that's really the order of this simon. Had a kasha non-kosher dishes based on the psukim in by the clay midyan. The general rule is that the Mishnah seems to be telling us is kibolo kach polto. However, it absorbs flavor. That's the way it's going to emit the flavor. That's the way you're going to be able to get the flavor out. However, a kli can only absorb flavor if there was the heat of yatzal ledespo. If it's less than yatzal ledespo, we assume that there's no absorption. How hot exactly is the Yatzaladispo? Okay, different sheetless and poskim, somewhere between 46 and 51 degrees Celsius, but whatever it is, below the heat of the Yatzaladispo, there's not going to be any need to kasher. So if your pot accidentally became non-kosher when milk fell into chalent, and the chalent was already hot, ki Yatzaladispo, you have to kasher the pot with hagala. But if you had a skewer that became non-kosher because you accidentally bought a delicious looking meat in the supermarket, but you didn't realize that you were in the local shop right, and what you bought was pork, or you fried meat without oil or other liquids in a dairy pan, so then you need to do libun, you need to really burn it with fire, blowtorch it, because it comes in direct contact with the fire, so kabbalah kach polto. Now it is mashma from the Trumas Hadeshim, this halacha is based on in Simen Kufayin Vav, that the reason Kabbalah Kach Polto is because when you cook using a high level of heat, the food gets absorbed deeper into the walls of the pot than if you were to use a lower level of heat. So to remove that absorbed flavor, you need the kli to come into contact with that same level of heat, because it has to get deep into the wall of the pot. Meaning, if a lower level of temperature is only going to penetrate, a tenth of a centimeter into the pot, and a higher temperature is going to penetrate a half of a centimeter into the pot, you're not going to be able to kasher that which was nivla with a higher temperature by using heat of a lower temperature. So when grilling or frying a pan without liquids, the food is absorbed directly into the grates in the pan. So kashering requires the highest level of heat. It requires libun, direct contact with the flame. And the lower level of heat is cooking food in a pot with a liquid, and that way the liquid itself serves to lower the temperature of the fire. And in order to kasher the pot, you need to do hagala. And an even lower level than that is irui. Right, so you pour hot liquid directly from the kli rishon, that loses a few degrees on the iroi, on the pour, and therefore from being exposed to the air in the environment, and therefore you're going to need even a lower level of heat. So that's why we assume la'alach, as we've discussed many times, that iroi is only mevashal kedei klipa. So if, let's say, hot non-kosher sauce from a kli rishon spills on your fork, the way to kasher it is really just by pouring from a kettle directly over your fork, and that's the iroi kli rishon.
And tzli is kedei
nitiva. Tzli. Okay. So we'll get there. So if a fork falls into a bowl of hot non kosher soup, so the way to kasher is you put it in a kli sheni filled with hot water lechora. That's what Kiddush Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Basa B'Chalav. That klisha bala b'klisheni yachalag ilo b'klisheni v'klisha bala me'ira klirishon yachalag shiru gam kenal di ira m'klisheni v'chein adin b'klishlishi revi k'daruk shabala kach terach adalaso mishum shekabolo kach polta. But all of this assumes above yatzaladis. Once you're below yatzaladis, you don't have to worry about anything. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is part of Alicha Shlomo, that once the Torah tells us what the methods of kashering are, we no longer start analyzing the specific temperatures of the food. Meaning, it's true. Trumas Hashem gives a svara for why it is that we have these different levels of kashering. Because that which is hotter is going to penetrate more. That which is colder will penetrate less. And therefore you need that which is hotter in order to draw out the top. Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Nalich Shlomo Paragimel Oshei, writes as follows. He writes, Hag'ola berotchin machshira gam kli shetashmisho b'chom agvo yoser mechom shel retichos mayim. He says, there are different boiling points for different liquids. Anyone know any chemistry over here? Right, water's boiling point is? What? 100 Celsius even, right? That's the boiling point of water. What's the boiling point of oil? More, right? Meaning hot oil is a much worse burn. If you burn yourself with hot oil, that is a much worse burn than burning yourself with hot water, because water starts to evaporate as soon as it gets past 100 degrees Celsius. Oil will continue to get hotter beyond 100 degrees Celsius. Let's say you had a pot that was boleya treif hot oil. Can you do hagala? It was all liquid. Can you do hagala? So using the Trumas Hadeshet, you would say, no way, because the hotter it is, the more deeply it penetrates into the kli. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, absolutely yes. Da'af shechom ha'shel tzir zeh, hu harbe yoser mimea malus chom shel amayin, even though the boiling point may be a way more than 100 degrees Celsius, they have a water near a pashut to ein lachos zeklal. That there are a lot of other liquids that will not start to boil unless it's more than 100 degrees Celsius. It all depends where you are. Is that true? It depends your altitude. Okay, so if you're
at a lower point.
What?
Higher at a lower point.
Meaning if you live in Denver.
If you live in Denver, you have to cook for much longer because it'll boil. Your pot boils at a lower temperature, so it's hot.
Your pot boils at a lower temperature, really?
Exactly.
Wow.
So you have to add a minute or two.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. So Rosh Hashanah was aware of that, apparently. I was not. And Rosh Hashanah says, but we still do Agala. right? We still always do agala. So a non-kosher pressure cooker with liquid can be kosher using agala, even though the waters of agala don't reach the heat levels of the pressure cooker. The pressure cooker gets really, really hot. So if you boil non-kosher oil in a pot, you could still kosher the pot with agala using water. So it's a big kula, also a chum, right? Meaning, if something was balea al yedei klisheni, can you kasher al yedei klisheni? Right? Meaning it could be that you can't just always say kabbalah kachbalta. Meaning, let's say a dishwasher, right? So you want to kasher the dishwasher. So you can say the dishwasher, however it was balea, I'll just run it again. And then it's going to be polite, however it was balea. Yeah, but if it was balea with iroi and you need to do hagala, so can you just say, oh no, it was balea with iroi, so I'll kasher with iroi. But if you really need to do hagala and what you're doing isn't hagala, so it could be that it doesn't kasher, that we have hagala and we have libun, and it's got to be one of them that you're doing. And if you're not doing, if you're doing neither hagala nor libun, then you're not really really kashering. So we'll get into some of the details of this later on, but. Boiling point of oil is, I think, 160 Celsius, like way higher. That is really, really burn you. Anyway, so we'll get back into this later on. Let's start the siman over here. Let's see what the Shulchan Aruch has to say. So says the Shulchan Aruch, Sif Aleph, Halokeach kelim misham ben ovi chavim, you buy old kelim, kedarach shen sham shem ben ovi chavim, kachlach shem, the same way that ovi chavim use it, that's how you kashmir. V'ficha, halokeach, litash misham shem sham shem ben, bitzonein, so let's start with that which only handles cold. Drinking glasses, things like that. Madichan, you just rinse them off. It's all shashvan hate of Maim, you want to really scrub them well. In order to really empty, to clear off any issue that's on them. That's Marika, and then you soak them in water, and you topple them in their mutter. It says Rama, Yesh Makom Shnagu Hatter Lossum Yain Bekelim Shinshem with the Bakim Bechelev, Misham Sheteva Yain with Roach Menachelev. Can you imagine someone trying to be mounting this nowadays? That they take Mamish Chazer Shmaltz and they put it on the barrel and you pour wine in there. And the Rama says, yeah, but Schmaltz doesn't really mix so well with wine, so it's okay, the wine is kosher. So it's like shocking that you have. I think that there's a Chuvus Marsham. I must have it in my notes. I probably wrote it down at some point. There's a Chuvus Marsham that discusses this Ramah. He has a kula based on this Ramah. Darkei Tshuva brings about they apparently had like treif glue that would hold kelim together. And so can you use such kelim if there's treif glue that holds the kli together? So the Marsham uses such a similar story to the Ramah. He says, would they ever use a glue to hold a kli together if that glue was soluble in the contents of the kli? Meaning, if every time you use that kli, the glue just went into the contents of the glue would fall apart, the whole kli would fall apart. So they would never use a glue for that. So it's just like the Ramah says, like the chelev that holds the barrels together. And he thought it could be, I assume the glue was not nosin tam l'gam, I guess. If it was nosin tam l'gam, then maybe it wouldn't be, I guess the chachili wouldn't rely on nosin tam l'gam. So it says it's the derech, livroach min hachelev. So let's talk a little bit about that maybe, about the idea of using something for cold. Now, using something for cold doesn't really affect any bleos. You just really need to make sure the kelim are extremely clean. The idea that cold is not balea is proven by a rush in the end of Avodah Zarah, Parakei Sof Simin Yud Aleph, where the rush brings the raya from, I think we discussed this once this year, he brings the raya from Haman, that who's the one that taught us this halacha, that cold is not balea? Haman taught us the halacha. Anyone remember the context? Megillah Daf Yud Gimel, right? The Gemara Megillah says that Haman tells Achashverosh, you know, the Melech Ein Shavu L'Anicham, that the king shouldn't leave the Jewish people around because they're terrible, and what makes them so awful? So he gives an example. He says, what's going to happen if there's some wine and the Melech touches the wine, they're going to spill out the wine, they're never going to drink it, right? The whole wine is going to be trafed, they're never going to drink, they're not going to touch it. But what did he contrast it with? A fly. A fly goes into the wine, and then they'll just take the fly out, and they'll drink the rest of the wine, they're going to have no problem with it. So you're worse than a fly in their eyes. But Haman was making an argument based on what the halacha is, based on what we would actually do. If Achashverosh would touch our wine, Taka, he's right, we would spill the whole thing out. And if a fly would go into our wine, he's Taka right, we would just take the fly out and we would drink the wine. Says the Rosh, why? Don't you have to be worried that there are blios of the fly in the wine? So it must be because it's cold. And since the fly is cold and the wine is cold, there are no blios, and therefore you don't have to worry about the wine, and that's why we would just take the fly out and drink the wine. It's somewhat, look, the halacha is true, right? That with cold, there are no blios. But there are a few ha'aras that the achronim make on this rush. There's a Chuvus Chasam Sofer. It's a fascinating Chuvus Chasam Sofer. I don't know the exact Mar Makom on me. I'm sure someone could find it. About his Rebbe of Nassim Adler. I think we discussed it once this year. The Chasam Sofer is a tshuva about a butter factory. And what happened, I don't know if it was an outdoor butter factory or how this happened exactly, but apparently as they were churning the butter, a bird flew into the butter and drowned in the butter that they were making. And now they wanted to know what they could do with their butters. The butter, asur or mutter. So Rav Nassim Adler, the Rebbe of the Chasam Sofer, said that you got to throw out all the butter because basar b'chalav, right? It's a mixture of milk and meat because the chicken is chicken and the butter is butter. So you got to throw out all of the butter. So Chasam Sofer, you ever read the Chasam Sofer as Shuvas where he describes what Rav Nassim Adler was like? He had more reverence for Rav Nassim Adler than just about like any Talmud had for a Rebbe. In history, Agav, did anyone realize that Rav Shaftel grew his beard in Avelos? I always thought it was just because he felt like the Rav. Right, Shai mentioned last night that he was knowing Avelos. I thought he just, now that the Rav's gone, he's going to be the one looked up to as Rav Shiva, so he should have a beard. Did you ever hear that before? I didn't know that. He was knowing Avelos. Okay, that's right. I heard Brian. Yeah. Okay, that's what he said. So he said, no, you got Bailus to the Rav, and then the Rav said, oh, looks nice on you. So he goes, wow. But anyway, so if you look at how the Chasam Sofer describes Rav Nassim Adler, so he describes in one Shuvah how he saw once his two Rebbe's, the Hafla was the Levi, Rav Nassim Adler was the Kohen, and he saw the Hafla pouring water on the, you know, doing it before Birchus Kohanim, you know, pouring water on Nassim Adler's hands for Birchus Kohanim, and it was the holiest sight he's ever seen, the Kedusha in one place. You know, he was very, very taken. Rav Nassim Adler, Rav Shaft always points out, kidnapped the Chasam Sofer when he was young. The Chasam Sofer spoke at his bar mitzvah, and he gave a shetel arguing on his AD Sefer or something, and the father, some sort of his father, got up and made a macha against him. He can't argue on the Zayda, or a chutzpah, slapped him across the face or something. So Rav Nassim Adler said, this father is going to stifle this child. He's going to, you have to ask questions of learning, he has to be free to learn. So he kidnapped him, he took him, and he brought him into his house and he raised him. Chasam Sofer was very, very taken by Rav Nassim Adler. Every minute that he had, so Chasam Sofer said, basar chalav, and you can't do anything, you gotta throw all the butter out? That's the craziest psak in the entire world, right? Meaning, that's saying that it's asa ba'anah. I mean, one day of your day, you know that that's not asa ba'anah. Why? What happened? It's basar oaf. It's not gonna be asa ba'anah. How could he possibly? He says it's impossible that Rav Nassim Adler would. He said it's possible he was tired and he wasn't thinking straight or whatever, but that Yotzei Takala al Yodo, that he's going to make such a mistake that people are going to have to throw out the whole butter factory. He's going to have to throw out all that butter for no reason. It can't be. So the Chasam Sofer works very hard to try to figure out how Rav Nassim Adler's psak must have been correct, even though Lav Mitamed, even though his tam was obviously incorrect, because it's obviously not possible to call it Midaraisa. Right, so it's got to be that he's correct. So how is it correct? So he says that the bird flew in while it was still alive. So the butter was balea, not just nevela, it was balea ivminachai. So it's not that it's asa ba'anah, it's just what are you going to do with it? I mean, normally you would say, sell it to a guy, and that's how you'll get your anah. You can't sell it to a guy, it's got blios of ivminachai in it, because the bird was alive when it flew into the butter. So you can't just sell it to Goyim. So even though it's mutar ba'anah, there's just no other way to get rid of it. The Chasam Sofer then alludes to this rush at the end of the tshuva. It doesn't make it abundantly clear what he's talking about. But the way they explain the Chasam Sofer is that when he alludes to the rush is that maybe a living bird can't be mafrit. So maybe it's not a neighbor and a chai issue because it's a living thing and it can't be mafrit. Oh, but you see from the Rush that a living thing can be mafrit. Why? Because what did Haman say to Achashverosh? A fly goes into their drink and they're going to take out the fly and then they're going to drink the wine. And says the Rush, that's a raya, that cold can't be valeya. How's that a raya? The fly was alive. Maybe that's why it couldn't be balea. And a living thing can't be maflit. How is that a raya? That cold can't be maflit. Elamai, you see, a living thing can be maflit. And mimela, the Rush has a raya that the only reason that it's not, it doesn't ruin the wine, is because it's cold. So the Rush is a raya. The Rebbe was right. The Nasnadu was right. That it's not going to be that you have, there's nothing you can do with this butter, you have to throw it all out. So Ephraim asks, what? How do you know the fly was alive, first of all? Well, it flew in, it had to have been alive, yeah, but maybe it died. Then it died, but so and then it was mafia. Yeah, also meaning if it, once it landed in the wine, the chare died. So that's a little strange. Rav Shlomo Kluger has a chuk where he says this whole chassam sofer is a joke. He actually says maybe we take gichuch. You read this, some sort of the whole thing sounds like a big joke. So what's he talking about? That you're going to say that a Baal Chai can give tam into something? Let me ask you something. You have a coffee with sugar, and let's say you have the hands of a woman, that you can handle anything hot, right? So you want to mix the coffee and the sugar. So you stick your finger in. Or you're serving soup, and like your finger just hits the soup. Soup is trafe now? Basar Adam, that it was Balea? Eber Menachai? I don't know, right? Meaning that the soup is going to be traded? It's ridiculous. It can't possibly be that that's the case. So that's what the Shlomo Kluger says. It's maybe we dig yichuch. The whole thing is a joke. It can't be that you stick your finger in your soup and it's going to become hasid.
What if the bird
is
Yatzalev?
What?
What if the bird itself is Yatzalev?
While it's alive? Yeah. What bird is Yatzalev while it's alive?
Nah.
No, at the Shechita, the Beis HaShechita.
So meaning the
Beis HaShechita is where all the blood is rushing, so it gets very hot.
It's inside the Beis HaShechita, which is Yatzalev,
but not the outside. Yeah, that's where, because the blood is all rushing to that area, and that's not Yatzalev, meaning the Gemara says that it's not Yatzalev, so that's what Rosh Hashanah says, Yatzalev must be above that temperature, right? So that's, right? So apparently it died in the butter, right? It died in the butter. So after it died, but still, meaning the point is, after it died, so then it's just possible to call mitrabanan. So what would make it trade? Says Chassam Sofer, it's the 3 seconds before it died. That when it was polite to say from Menachai Tam. That's when it. There's a stipler that tries to defend the Pesach, and he says that when a bird burns, the wings burn first. And the body remains alive. Meaning it's like ears on a person, right? What was going to say in the beginning of Ksubis about Gehenim, right? That when a person goes to Gehenim, their ears burn first. So hearing Rosh and Har, right? The Gemara says about the fingers sticking in the ears, and right? The soft stuff burns first. For a bird, it's the wings that burn first. So the wings die before the rest of the bird dies. So the bird is still alive, but the wings could already be nosing tam. Meaning, you're right, a living piece of meat cannot be nosing tam. But the wings of the bird are eiver menachai, because the bird is alive, but they're able to be nosing tam, because the wings are dead. That's how the stipler tries to, thread the needle a little bit. So it's halavai, we should all get to a level where when we make a mistake in Pesach, people go like this to try to make the Pesach make sense. But nasnadu. The other issue with this Rush, Rafaim Zalman Margolia says that there must have been shishim against the fly in a cup of wine. So why would you throw out the fly? You can drink the wine. And even if it was hot, you'd be able to drink the wine. How's that a raya that the cold is not balaya? And don't tell me the fly is a beria, because it's a blea of the beria. It's not that you're taking the beria out and you're throwing it in the garbage. So it's a difficult Rush. Stam. It's a difficult Rush that you're going to bring a raya from Haman, and to bring a raya from Haman, you know, like, do anti-Semites not make up stuff also, right? Meaning, like, to bring a raya from Haman is shver in the first place. But then, what exactly the raya is, but the halacha is not halacha. So we assume that with cold, you're not going to have glios, except we already learned some kafei, right? You have by kavush, right? A kavush is an exception. And even with cold, if something is kavush, it's going to... So what's kavush? It has to be a liquid in order to be kavush, and it has to be for 24 hours. So if you have a Tupperware where you store cold liquid, it could be 24 hours that it's going to be kavush. So what about frozen items? Do frozen items become kavush? So would you need to kasher such a thing? So the halacha of kavush doesn't apply to solids, right? It only applies to liquids because it's got to fill the surface of the kli. The thing is, when you freeze something, it starts as a liquid and then you freeze it and it becomes a solid, but it fills the surface of the kli. So the Prima Gadim in the beginning of Siman Kuf Hei says that kavush is only on the davar hamenaneah, that it's something that if you swish it around, it like swishes around, meaning it really takes the shape of the kli. Once you have a frozen item, meaning if it freezes in the first hour or two that you put it in the freezer, so you're not going to have kavush, because as a liquid, it was not didn't have 24 hours in the kli. However, Prima Gadim writes that the Beis Lachem Yehuda is machmir, and because the Beis Lachem Yehuda is machmir, b'makom hefsid yesh lahachmir. There is a comment of the Mishnah Brura. It's tucked away in a Sharat Siyun in Siman Tav Mem Zayin Sif Katan Ayin Zayin, where he doesn't even bring the Beis Lachem Yehuda, he says, just be making. That frozen items do not create a sense of kavush, and you could just straight be making with it. As long as it freezes within 24 hours of being put into the kli, then it's fine. In general, the Shaila about the Beis Lachem, the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva also against the Beis Lachem Yehuda. Just stop. Not about this Beis Lachem Yehuda. Any Beis Lachem Yehuda. He doesn't like the Beis Lachem Yehuda. He says Beis Lachem Yehuda paskins with svaras, and he doesn't paskin with rayas, and it's not good enough. And apparently they already started printing it on the side of the Shulchan Aruch in the Chassam Sofer's time. How does this guy get on the Shulchan Aruch? Like he was unhappy about it. I think post can quote, but I mean, Beis Lachem Yehuda is quoted all the time in your day. I don't know. But Chassam Sofer was not happy about it. But so Mishnah Berurah ignores him in this case. Mishnah Berurah ignores Beis Lachem Yehuda and says that, like the Prima Gadim's Natiya, that really la halacha, that frozen thing is not a problem. So Mishnah Berurah says in the name of the Shach that we don't rely on Mili V'Iroi Beishari Suri, which is funny. You know, that to do Mili V'Iroi, like you fill up the bathtub and you soak the glasses for 24 hours and then. Right, so that used to be a thing that people did. So he said that's only a din for Pesach, which is strange because by Pesach you normally have Chumrah Dechamitz, you don't have Kula Dechamitz. So when you need Mili V'Iroi, so Mishnah Berurah says, yeah, it's only for Pesach. People use it on glasses, on drinking glasses. The question is whether drinking glasses need anything. I mean, if you have non-kosher drinking glasses, don't forget the non-kosher drinking glasses, the most common Shaila. You have drinking glasses in your house. Do you have two sets of drinking glasses in your house or one set of drinking glasses? So most families have, let's say, one set of drinking glasses, but they only use glasses when they're having fleshes. At a milk meal, they'll use plastic cups or something. But do you have to do that? Can you use glass, drinking glasses for a milk and flesh meal? So the Mechaber in Kuf Lamed Hei says that glass is not baleya. But the Ramah writes that it's boleya with kavush. That if it's something sits in the glass for 24 hours, it's going to be boleya. So the Achronim explained that the Ramah is only machmir nachas Pesach, because the Ramah only writes this in Tafnan Aleph. He doesn't say anything in the other day. He only says in Or Chai that glass is boleya with kavush. So that's a chumrah de Pesach. That's a chumrah de chametz. Nowadays, drinking glasses, it's not even a shayla, because drinking glasses typically don't hold anything for 24 hours. Certainly if there's a woman around the house, something's not going to sit in the glass for 24 hours. It's going to get washed out by somebody at some point. And also, there's never anything milchik fleishig or treif in the glass. I mean, what are you putting in the glass? In the glass, you have soda, you have orange juice, you have whatever, wine. You're not putting anything that's anything anyway. Cookware, like what do they call it? You know, the oven to table with the glass. Pyrex, right? That's glass. So the Pyrex, so that's a much bigger shayla. That's not just kavlish, that's heat. And heat with glass is a different shayla we'll discuss in a moment. So nowadays, this idea of kavlish by a glass, it never really comes up. When you never have a glass that's kavlish, where what it's kavlish with is something that you have to worry about. So at Minhag HaPoskim, I think we allow drinking glasses to be used for both milk and inflation. Just don't put actual milk and inflation in the glass. You shouldn't be drinking meat juice out of the glass, hot meat juice out of the glass, and you shouldn't be drinking, or cold meat juice even out of the glass, or you shouldn't be drinking, chocolate milk out of the glass, or something like that, hot chocolate out of the glass. Okay, so as long as you use your glass pretty much for part of drinks, everyone is making. My house would make them. Now, whether glass is bolei ahat is a different shayla. In Siman Tafnun Aleph, there are three shitos and rishonim that are all brought by the Machaber, that either it's like a kli cheres, which means it's bolei but it's not bolei, or it's not bolei b'chlal, or it's bolei but you can kasher it, so it's like kli matkis. So there is a machlokas, there's a machlokas rishonim, machlokas in Balei Tosos. And over there, the Ramah says the minimum is to be machmir. That glass is bolea, but it's not polite. You treat it like klichar. So if you have a, what was it called again? I just said it a second.
Pyrex,
right? You have a Pyrex that you cooked a meat pie in, or you cooked a cheese souffle or something like that. So then you're not allowed to use it for the other meal. And Priya Bhagavan points out, though, that the Ramah doesn't say this in Yaradeya. And it could be that this is only in Hilchas Pesach, and therefore the Prima Gadol says B'makom Hefsid, maybe it could be Mekel B'Shari Surin, that it's not Balei at all. This comes up a lot of times with caterers that use glass dishes. So whenever there's glass, it's always a Snif L'Hakel. So a lot of times, like the caterers will, most of the Hashkachos, for whatever reason, do not allow the caterers to use hotel dishwashers. They don't rely on kashering of the dishwashers, right? Hotel dishwashers, first of all, are very different than our dishwashers. There's not like the single chamber that fills with steam. It's like, it's just a different setup. It's on a track, whatever. There are two chambers. So hotel dishwashers are different. They don't allow normally kashering with the hotel dishwashers. So what do? When the caterer takes over a hotel to do an event, they'll kasher the countertops or cover the countertops or both. They'll kasher the oven, easy enough. But they won't kasher the dishwashers. And they'll cook everything off-site in their commissary. They'll bring everything. All they're doing is heating, warming things up there. And then they have all these disgusting dishes. And they have to bring all these dirty dishes back to their commissary to clean them. And that's really annoying for the caterers because the stink of it all, just like you're schlepping so much of a stink and a mess. And it's, all these dirty dishes. So a lot of them will use glass dishes at the shmorg as much as they can, and then at least the glass dishes the hashkachas will allow them to use in the dishwasher. They'll rely on Eroi kashering the dishwasher, plus what's the Eroi even going to put into the clean, meaning all the sniffing we have, plus the soap being a davar pogim, plus it's glass, so they rely on all these things when it comes to glass dishes. Okay, but we're going a little far afield over here. So bottom line is, what we saw so far is we haven't really discussed Hagal yet, right? We've only discussed the idea that cold is not Balea unless it's Kavush. We discussed a little bit about Kavush, about the Gedarim of Kavush, and some basic principles of the difference between Hagalah and Libun without actually getting into Hagalah and Libun. We know, just by the way, just to mention again about plastic, Ramesh has two tshuvas about plastic. In our Chaim Chalik Beis and Sadi Beis, he writes that rubber, which is the same as plastic, cannot be kasher. Rabbi Eider says that Ramesh told him, and he's Neid Neman, that that's only for Pesach. But for Shari Surim, he allowed kasher in plastic. And in fact, in a posthumous tshuva, in Ebn Ezer Chalik Dalit Simon Zayin, Ramesh writes that way. That you can kasher plastic or Teflon or whatever, which is a plastic coating for Shari Surim, just not for Pesach, and this comes up a lot. It comes up with dishwashers, it comes up with microwaves, and things like that. But again, we'll get into more details later. So, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow, first of all, I think I'm only saying Shir three times this week, tomorrow and Wednesday, because Thursday we're having a special guest Shir on Stam, from Rabbi Ruvein Mendelitz, Be'ez Hashem. I think we'll open that up to all Smicha students. Right? Makes sense? He's fantastic. I had him speak to my Talmidim when I was at Lander, and he was amazing. The guys love him. And, like, If you have any questions about anything Stam related, bring them, because the guy is a fountain of knowledge in this this area. So and he'll sit here answering questions for as long as you want him to. He's a very patient fellow. So that's going to be Thursday. But next time, what we're going to discuss is Rov Tashmisho, which is something we didn't get to discuss yet, and then we'll start getting into the details of Kashrut. Rov Tashmisho is how you determine what the usage of a kli is. Is it based on what it was ever used for, or what it's normally used for? So Be'ez Hashem, we'll get to that next time. That's tomorrow. Okay. Have a great day.
Oh, the clock is wrong. I was rushing at the end.
What's that?